If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air. Dan, you're in Hong Kong. How are you?
I'm great. I'm feeling very demure and very mindful this week.
Oh, God, so here we go.
I'm very conscious that we have listeners tuning in who want to hear updates, so we're going to deliver it in a very cutesy way.
No, we're not. We're just going to do exactly what we've done for almost a year now, regardless of whatever the current TikTok trend is, which I assume you are kind of integrating there in your weird speech pattern.
Oh no, that was just normal. There was no reference to anything whatsoever. No, but I am in Hong Kong, and wow, what an interesting experience it's been, because I spent a day in Hong Kong earlier this year, but since before that, I hadn't been in Hong Kong since before COVID. And you remember the protests that were going on a lot in 2019.
Yeah.
That's when I was there last. So unfortunately, I felt like the city has changed a lot. We were just reading about, I think it was over 100,000 residents of Hong Kong. And keep in mind, they only have a population of just over 7 million, but 100,000 people left the country last year alone. So a lot of people are leaving. Hotels are like a third of the price of what they used to be, which of course is good for travelers, but it makes me think of Cathay Pacific, their growth plans. They're majorly expanding the airport in Hong Kong. So, you know, things change in very unpredictable ways. And this is
I wanted to ask, like, the moment you said, I knew you were going to Hong Kong, and I'm like this with everyone who now returns back to Hong Kong since the pandemic. I'm really, really curious to get their take on it, because everyone that I speak to says it's just not the same anymore. Everything has shut down. Everything feels a bit low and depressing if you know how vibrant and buzzy it was pre-pandemic. And I just find it fascinating that out of everywhere on earth, Hong Kong is really like the poster child for the place that was just decimated by COVID and hasn't recovered in any way, shape or form yet. So knowing how often you used to go before the pandemic,
yeah,
I was eagerly awaiting your analysis on this and your verdict. Is there not that buzz that you always described Hong Kong having?
Well, I think it depends on what you're comparing it to. It definitely has a buzz compared to much of the world still. It's just, it used to be so crazy. And I think it's COVID, and it's also China and the changes and the fact that people are leaving. Tourists in general are not returning in the way they used to. And for example, we didn't mention this last week. We mentioned British Airways stopping their flights to Beijing, right? Yeah. But they're also reducing Hong Kong to once daily on a 777 this winter. And just for a point of comparison, it used to be three daily pre-COVID, and one of those was on an E380. So that just shows.
Yeah, I was about to say, the 380 used to go there. And BA were very selective, as with most airlines, as to where they send, you know, an A380 with such capacity.
Yeah, it's very sad. I flew there on Emirates. The flight was maybe 50% full. And I asked the crew, I was like, I assume your flights have been very full. It's summer. They said, yeah, every single flight we've had has been sold out. This is the first one that hasn't been like this. So I was like, ooh, this is not good.
Yeah, that isn't. What about the food scene? What about the, you know, the food and culture scene and all of that? I mean, are there places that you would love and you were frequenting in so much pre-pandemic? Are they all still there and open and alive and you're able to enjoy?
No, my favorite place went out of business.
So it really is like, it really is what you hear, because it's just such a shame. I really thought, okay, with you, I would be able to hear that, look, it's not as, you know, a lot of people saying that didn't used to go, for example, as often as you said, didn't know it as well, and it is still there, but bloody hell, even your favorite places have gone.
Yeah. Again, I wouldn't say don't go, and it's not like it's dead. It's just it doesn't have that crazy vibe that it used to have. And there are so many other places you could go, either if you go to Japan or Korea or even Taipei, or then in Southeast Asia, you have Bangkok, Singapore, Malaysia. All of those are now better competitors toward Hong Kong than they used to be. Oscar and I also went to Shanghai last summer, and I would say Shanghai is more of an exhilarating experience because Shanghai is very much alive and well and thriving, you know?
And that's interesting, isn't it? As to because if you were to blame that Hong Kong had the harsh lockdowns that was kind of influenced by China and so on, well, nobody had it harder than China, and yet China's doing so well in so many of its big key cities now. So there is definitely more to the story than just the severity of the lockdown, isn't there?
Well, speaking of Cathay, I mean, they're one of the few airlines that is betting big on the 777X, which I imagine airlines are getting a little bit nervous. They have been a little bit nervous, but do you want to share the latest news coming out of that? I don't want to call it a mess, but that disappointment, maybe.
Well, I hope that when I saw this, I thought, God, I hope this is not now the beginning of, different chapters of disruption with the 777X that hasn't faced too much disruption aside from the very obvious delays. So the delays have come as Boeing have been under all this scrutiny and so on. But there's nothing specifically wrong, if you like, with the 777X, not least until we saw this headline from the Air Current. Basically breaking the news that Boeing has grounded its 777X test fleet. And remember that this is an aircraft that is not yet in commercial service. So they exist, but they belong to Boeing as part of flight test campaigns. And that's all very normal before they eventually go to the first customer. So Boeing have grounded its entire 777X fleet, that is the test fleet, after a failure of a key engine mounting structure that ultimately is a crucial piece that mounts the engine to the aircraft. So it's to visualize it, that's what we're talking about it. And a similar finding was made on two other active test aircraft, which of course indicates that it wasn't isolated to one jet, but at least on three, immediately initiating that grounding. It's not the development that any customer airline would want to see as the 777X progresses, because this is an aircraft that most airlines that have ordered the aircraft are actively anticipating and waiting for with a level of urgency because of the state of air travel worldwide and the fleet shortage. So some airlines can be a bit more relaxed about knowing that aircraft deliveries will slip, as we refer to it in aviation, and they'll, yes, originally they were going to be arriving in January this year, but it slipped to the end of this year or Q1 next year. And some airlines are able to kind of better cope with that than others. But the majority of 777X customers, when you look at them, they need these aircraft because of the fleet shortage that we have had ever since the pandemic as well. It kind of existed just before, but the pandemic definitely accelerated that. There's not much else that we know, to be honest, apart from this development. And I mean, we're going to see how it goes.
The sad thing specifically about the 777X is that this is sort of the new flagship for many airlines, the one where they're going to introduce their best new business and first class products. And we've spoken about SQ doing it, Emirates, QR, of course. And even, British Airways was talking about a new impressive first class on that aircraft. So the more this gets pushed forward, the more it raises the question, so what next? When are we going to see these promised products? And if the delays just keep, building on and on, what will happen eventually? And, an airline like Emirates eventually will be using this aircraft to, at least on some routes, replace the A380. So what
As you
happens?
say, the 777X is key to replacing so many different aircraft across different airline fleets, and you're right. What happens then? Does that mean that if we see, oh, excuse me, just have a breaking news alert. It's not Boeing related,
I thought
so
that
I
was
don't
one
have
of your
to address
nice
it.
sound effects for the
No.
podcast.
But it does that mean that if we see something like this begin to evolve into other similar issues that then ultimately the FAA will be keeping a close eye on, perhaps taking action? Does that mean that, you know, all those products that we're waiting for, the new cabins, are they put on hold? Do they launch elsewhere? We had a question about this last week. Most airline chief executives that I speak to are quite confident that Boeing will eventually deliver the 777X in the time frame that they have promised. But this is an aircraft that is already, you know, completely delayed. I will comment on what Boeing had said. So Boeing had responded by saying, quote, during scheduled maintenance, we identified a component that did not perform as designed. Our team is replacing the part and capturing any learnings from the component and will resume flight testing when ready. And I think the key part of that statement that I took was the when ready part, mm-hmm. rather than what Boeing had previously done, where they're insisting that the 737 MAX didn't have as severe problems as some other stakeholders were presenting and were always kind of, and the 737 MAX will be, you know, back and airborne imminently or shortly or next week or by the end of the month or in just a moment. Or it was all very, very, nothing to see here, fast, fast, fast. Now, we know Boeing now has new leadership, and the new leadership has been brought in to essentially put the manufacturer back on track when it comes to safety. So I think the most telling part of that statement was that flight testing, as we would expect, is going to resume, but only when ready. In other words, we're not going to be rushing this.
Yeah. Do you think, so we've spoken about this, I don't know, 20 episodes ago or something. Yeah. And of course, it's every AvGeek's dream to see a world where the A380 becomes relevant again in the future. And the 777X is 5 years delayed now. So at what point, at what level of delay does the 777X just become not interesting and we need something different? Because from what I read, it's about 10% more fuel efficient than the 777-300ER, which is good, but it's not a game changer. It's not going to save the environment, you know? So we've already waited 5 years overdue for an aircraft that's 10% better. At what point is this outdated?
Well, it's a very valid question. And I don't think that we're going to be seeing any clean sheet new aircraft design prop up and then become available over the next few years or even in this decade. Where are we now? 2024? Yeah, we're definitely not in this decade. But I do think that all this does is prolong and ultimately increase the longevity, if you like, of the likes of the A380 that are still sticking around today at many airlines as a direct result of the 777X being so delayed, right? So I would say that we're already seeing that. The fact that the A380 is still flying at some of the Gulf carriers that otherwise wouldn't be flying the A380 and also some European carriers that operate is because Boeing didn't get their together and ultimately the 777X is well over now, 5 years late. Do I think that coming up in the future, if Boeing's 777X turns out to be a little bit of a nightmare with launch and it's delay after delay, and at what point do they miss the boat, to answer your question? Airlines are kind of stuck with waiting around for this now. You know that if you haven't got in your orders to secure slots to take from the competitor, such as Airbus, aka if you haven't ordered A350s and that in your slots are not already in the order book, well, you're going to be waiting years. It's years. If I rock up now with you and we say, okay, Airbus, On Air with Dan and Alex is doing so well with that we can now afford a fleet of 4 A350-1000s so that we never have to set foot on American Airlines ever again. Despite me having several connections there, I still think we would be forced to wait in excess of 7 years, right?
Yeah.
So you can imagine what the airlines that are genuinely reliant on these fleet expansions and replacing older aircraft, the challenge that they are facing. I just think that if anything, as I say, it will push that expiry date of the A380 even further down the line, which is, to be honest, good news for a lot of passengers because the A380 is the world's favorite in terms of the most comfortable passenger aircraft.
Yeah, it's sad to think that, you know, the A380 Plus, that even with all these problems, that's not a a reality.
Were you at Farnborough the year? Did you come to Farnborough the year that the A380 Plus was debuting?
I didn't see it. I'm so sad.
I mean, it
sad.
Was an A380 with like a massive winglet. Yeah. That was the.
Was that all? Nothing else?
In terms of what you could see physically, yes. And also, don't forget that the A380 Plus, if you like, that they had. I mean, it was the A380 Plus that they were debuting at Farnborough that year. If I remember correctly, there were no modifications whatsoever to that aircraft other than the addition of winglets. So it was kind of a promo thing. I stand to be corrected. I will go back and check that because I was there at the time. So much has happened since then. But if I remember correctly, yeah, it was just that test campaign A380 with big ass winglets on either side and an A380 Plus livery. And of course, this was an idea that Airbus were trialing just before they finally admitted defeat and stopped producing the A380.
Yeah. Such a shame. Such a shame.
Speaking of shame, Wizz Air in the news. And I only say that because, and with my greatest respect to what Wizz Air do, okay, and Wizz Air are arguably an enabler because they really do enable low-cost air travel for everyone. And that includes a demographic that would otherwise be priced out of being able to fly. Okay, so I like enablers. What I don't like, okay, is the airline with one of the worst performance records, at least in the UK, out of all UK airlines. They are absolutely disruptive when it comes to their schedule. They cancel very, very often and last minute. They have, I want to get the exact thing I want to quote. There we go. In June, Wizz Air was named as the worst for UK flight delays for the third year in a row. They are also the worst when it comes to paying out for the compensation that you, the passenger, is owed as a result of their erratic schedule and their flight delays and their cancellations.
Yeah. I've experienced that personally.
Oh, you have been on the route. Yeah. Actually, I remember that. When was that?
2021, I think, during COVID, okay. But... Don't want to
How long did they take?
They refused it. I went to court in Sweden.
Oh.
And the court rejected the case after one round, even though I don't even want to get into it because it Wizz Air was so shady. But long story short, they used new COVID restrictions as an excuse for canceling my flight one day before departure. They said this thing, which applies it starts applying today or whatever. We're canceling the flight tomorrow because of it, but people could still travel. It was just something small, so I knew because they didn't cancel the flight 2 days after that or four days after that. Also, it was just that my flight was empty, so they didn't want to operate it. That was all.
Wow. I mean, they have a track record for this. In the UK, the Civil Aviation Authority, which is the regulator, was forced to get involved after they had tens of thousands of complaints of the airline just not paying what it owed. And so when the regulator gets involved, you know, like, shit's just got real. And they very, very publicly reprimanded Wizz Air and said, we are now investigating why the airline is not fulfilling its contractual obligations by paying out XYZ to those that are owed it, and so on and so on. And so it got a little bit better when they when the CAA in the UK had to publicly name and shame them. In January this year, they paid out, I think it was just over £1 million to customers in compensation. Again, you know, don't get your violins out, Wizz Air, because it's what these passengers are owed. You are putting them through a roller coaster, cancelling and delaying their flights. Anyway, that's why I began with a little bit of shade about Wizz Air, because I don't like it when I see passengers being taken for a ride. I like them being taken for a ride 38,000 feet on time, everything, you know, as you just said, very demure, very mindful.
Exactly.
Okay? In that way, not in a, I'm taking you for a ride by, you know, trying to prevent you from being able to exercise your rights. And your rights are there for you to exercise. If you need representation, Dan and I, we have a law firm. We don't, not yet anyway. But so Wizz Air in the news because they have launched something which has gone absolutely viral, especially among young people. It is a subscription-based model, which of course we are seeing everywhere now. Everything's a subscription, but it is a subscription-based model on an all you can fly pass for unlimited flights, and that's for an annual subscription fee, as you can imagine. So essentially, Dan buys this all you can fly pass.
Why is it me?
Because let's be realistic, I'm not buying an all you can fly pass on Wizz Air. So we're gonna. So Dan spends £426 on an all you can fly pass for an unlimited number of flights for an entire year. If you're listening elsewhere, that's around 500 and something US dollars. It's about 500 euros, $570 or so. What do you think? What do you think? Now you know the details, because as with everything, the devil is in the details. What did you think when you saw the headline only?
When I saw the headline, I thought, no thanks, but it sounds it sounds like it could be a decent deal for some, but that's before I read the details.
What were the details?
So the details are you guys ready? You're paying for a one-year pass.
Yeah.
It works in Wizz Air's entire network, which is the good thing, because Wizz Air has a subsidiary in Abu Dhabi that even flies to the Maldives. So you can get very, very far on this pass. But there's...
Wait. So pause there. So that means you can go with this pass, essentially, you could go Luton to
Athens.
Athens to Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi to Maldives.
Yeah. Yeah.
You okay. Could. So that's the good part. Okay, all right.
The bad part is you can only book a maximum of 72 hours before the flight. So 3 days before your flight, you're able to book a seat. In addition to that, for every ticket you book, you have to pay pretty much 10 euros for your ticket, in addition to the yearly fee. Plus, that's the most basic ticket you can buy. So it doesn't include a carry-on besides a backpack. It doesn't include checked luggage. It doesn't include anything. So
it doesn't even include a bag, for example, that you would stow in the overhead locker.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So who is this for? I see this being for potentially university or high school students who live in Europe and just want to like be able to take spontaneous weekend trips. Do I think that this is even a wise investment? Absolutely not. Because with all these types of things, all you can eat, all you can fly, you're likely to end up using it less than you think initially. Mm-hmm. You're going to be like, on your fourth weekend of, should I fly across Europe? You're going to be like, actually, I'd prefer to stay home this weekend. Then you have an exam next weekend. There's going to be all this stuff. So given the existing prices of Wizz Air tickets as well, which, you know, might be 20, 30, 40 euros, I just see this as a very not worthwhile gamble. But maybe you'd like it, Alex.
I think we know my, you know, perception on this, but I don't know, it's not perception. I don't know if I'm compatible with, you know, this. Compatibility is really
Well, you're shorter
key.
Than me, so the legroom kind of works.
Excuse me, I will not have you present me on the podcast, which is audio only, as somehow like, you know, of an unusual height, okay? I am absolutely, you know, a little bit tall.
Let's just say your height is very demure.
You are a giant. You tower over everyone. For anyone that hasn't met Dan yet, if you're looking for him in the airport, just look for like the guy that is towering above everyone else. And you think, oh my God, that guy's tall. How would he fit in an Embraer or a, you know, a CRJ or whatever? He's that guy. You commented on how you think that it might not be a success because maybe a person will decide, you know what, I'm bored of traveling Europe this week. I introduce another factor, which is because you can only book a maximum of up to 72 hours before, from 72 hours. Excuse me, that's crucial. It's from 72 hours before each flight. So given you can only book in that window, it is very likely that the flights that you are trying to take are either not available because they are full or they have, you know, one seat remaining. And as I say, it's, you know, it's all a bit uncertain as to if you don't complete the booking there and then, that's going to sell out because a lot of their flights are full. Also, if you are relying on connections, as we said, if you're going to kind of connect your way with Wizz across Europe and Eastern Europe into Southern Europe and elsewhere, for example, you can get as far as as the Maldives via Abu Dhabi because of their subsidiary there, you are relying on all of those flights also having that availability for you to be able to yeah. use your unlimited pass. Also, all of those flights having that availability from the 72 hours point onwards. There's just a lot that has to go right. You know, you can't bring anything with you, as you had said. You're still paying 10 euros per flight on top of that. Sometimes Wizz Air flights are 25 euros, and that's because they're selling you the most basic fare with nothing. That's what this is. So I also am not sure that this is, for most people, the most sensible way to spend your £500 or so, $500 or so. It's a scheme that's only going to be limited to 10,000 people. So not everyone is going to be able to do this. And it's not an option for you to... They're not going to reach 10,000. No, that was my next question to you. Do you think they're going to reach 10K? No.
Yeah, no way.
Yeah. It's too ambitious for a new... For an unproven concept.
How many would buy it, do you think? Realistically.
Couple thousand?
If even... Okay, maybe...
Don't forget it's in all markets that they're operating in.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe content creators who want to make like videos about having will do it.
Have you seen, weren't Wizz Air the ones that were doing the fly to an unknown destination thing to go viral?
Yes. Have you seen those videos? That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was where like you booked a flight to, you know, and then you only found out when you landed and the cabin crew said, welcome to ... And it was like, Dalaman, Tokyo, Antalya, Turkey. And everyone's like, woohoo. Yeah, they could have been anywhere. They go.
And then, what happens if, like, you just land? They're like, welcome to Antalya. And then you're like, you haven't even booked a hotel because you don't know where you're going. Or was it a package?
No, it's a package. Yeah. So they sort out everything. And they also make sure that you're eligible. Because imagine you get there and you're like, wonderful, I have no visa.
You just have to go back. Oh, God.
Yeah. It's God. But anyway, so Wizz Air are kind of trying to go a bit viral. But they're also, and I will highlight this, they are going to have a bit of a difficult rest of the year ahead of them. They have aircraft that are going to be grounded due to engine issues. They're taking quite a few aircraft out of the fleet because of those issues that they've been having to schedule maintenance for this kind of upcoming autumn winter period. It's not going to be the easiest ride for Wizz. And I mean, you can understand for an airline that wants every single dollar, they and haven't been too best pleased at the fact that they now have to be paying out what they owe as well to passengers. So I wonder what your coverage is. What happens when you... Oh, now that's interesting. What happens when they cancel the flight at the last minute, which they so often do?
Yeah.
But you've bought an unlimited... I wonder if somehow you having the flight pass, you know, exempts you from being able to claim, compensation. Mm.
Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe they would be shady. You need to have a look
at that.
Yeah, I don't know how the ticket would be issued. Let's just also highlight here that Wizz Air's primary market and the market where they seem to do best is Eastern Europe. So this is not, you know, we're not as familiar with that market as Western Europe. But I will say, I have some of my closest friends are from Eastern Europe. And the one thing they all have in common, and this is a huge generalization, but I feel like I can say this because I'm also like this. They all love coupons and saving money in any way they can. I feel like it's a cultural thing. So if this sort of, I don't know if this will work with that mindset, but if it does, it could prove popular if people do the calculations because it's a market where people maybe like that kind of stuff a lot more than in Scandinavia, let's say, where people aren't that obsessed with coupons and stuff like that.
Remembering, of course, that you're still having to pay 500 euros up front for this, and that's only going to last you 12 months. I mean, I wonder if you... Okay, if you're trying to evaluate... Here we go, some practical advice. If you are trying to evaluate whether or not something like this is for you, right, have a look at what you had flown over the last year and if those routes are served by Wizz Air, and then have a look at the frequency that you'd flown them and calculate on average that if each flight was X amount return and that's what you were paying and you did it six times last year, did you get anywhere near to that 500 euros figure? Yeah. If you were exceeding the 500 euros figure, it could be kind of for you. It could be pretty aligned. if you were under, I'd say just avoid this. This is not something that you're going to actually save with, being mindful of the fact that it includes nothing and you still have to pay 10 euros each time, each flight.
Yeah, precisely. And the way, you know, you can maybe save the most from this if you're traveling as multiple people, because then, well, I don't know. There's many asterisks, and of course, each person would have to buy their own pass. There's a game I wanted to play with you on today's episode, Alex. I haven't told you about this, but this is the perfect opportunity because in the beginning, you said something positive about Wizz Air. And it's so funny you did that because I wanted to play a game where we both pick an airline for each other. We do it in multiple rounds that maybe is not our favorite or we don't think is very good, but we have to say at least one positive thing about it.
You know what this reminds me of?
What?
Do you remember the debate? I think it was the third and final one between Trump and Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Oh, you have to say something nice.
And the guy asked, "This campaign has been toxic and awful and you both clearly hate each other, but can you say one thing that you like about each other?" And it was the best question because for the first time we were about to see Trump say something nice about Hillary and Hillary say something nice about Trump. That's what you reminded me of.
Do you remember what they said?
I do. I remember Trump said, "I admire her stamina. Her stamina. She doesn't quit. She has stamina." And Hillary said, "I admire his children. I admire his children." There we go.
That's a bit of a cop out, but
it was a bit. Yeah. Well, she kind of framed it in a longer answer about how if his kids are something that she admires, it must be something to do with the parenting. I mean, she was being quite diplomatic about
that. Was nice to say something nice about his kids. So
what, you want me to say something nice about you?
No, I want to stick to airlines today. You already said something nice about Wizz Air. You do it back to me, but first I want to ask you to say one nice thing about American Airlines.
The ice cream sundaes.
Nice. Okay. Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah, that was very good.
All right. I want you to say one nice thing about British Airways.
They have friendly cabin crew.
They do. They do. Some of the best.
Yeah, they do.
Why do you sound like you've got a gun to your head?
Because, like, I feel like when there's an airline you don't love, you're not used to emphasizing the good things. That's the problem. I want you to say one nice thing about Air China. Do you know anything nice about them?
They frequently take delivery of brand new aircraft directly from Airbus, for example. And I like an airline that is reinvesting in modernizing its fleet, specifically by opting for the latest options from our European plane maker friends down in Toulouse.
Nice. All right. Any airline you want me to...
I want you to say something nice about Lufthansa.
They still fly the A340-600, the 747-400, and every Avgeek should be thankful for that because they're keeping the legacy of two great aircraft alive. So thank you, Lufthansa.
That's so true. That's so true. Yeah.
What about Southwest?
I like the way in which they were crucial in establishing the low-cost airline model historically as to what is still around today. And I appreciate where the concept started, and it arguably started with Southwest. And so I appreciate the pioneering spirit of Southwest.
That's nice. That's nice. Okay, one last one for today.
I want you to say something nice about Iberia.
Okay, let me think. I actually enjoy the first time I flew them. I will say their seat in business doesn't look that impressive, but I actually really enjoy the honeymoon seats in the middle when you're flying with someone else. I think they're super comfortable and can be a very enjoyable experience, especially if you want to sleep or, you know, watch a movie, something like that.
What about Transavia?
Green seats. They're very unique, very forward-thinking. Not very demure, but you don't have to be demure all the time.
Jet 2.
Okay, why is this turning into a me
because,
thing?
Because you've started this game without preparing me now. Like, oh, I want him to give his little nice opinion on everything.
Okay, Jet 2 are nice because they connect a lot of cities in the UK with destinations they wouldn't otherwise have flights to.
Well, I won't let anybody claim that Nonstop Dan isn't just a bundle of positivity, and let this episode be the reflect that record. Listen, the other headlining news that I wanted to discuss with you, and I'm sure you've seen this as it's just been announced, is that, as was widely expected because the CEO had hinted about this earlier this year, Qatar Airways has acquired a 25% stake in South Africa's ultimately most profitable and strongest independent regional airline, Aer Lingus. And so this is formalizing that deal that we knew for a while. QR were assessing an airline in the quote Southern Africa region. We then later learned it was going to be in South Africa, and finally now that it is a 25% stake in Aer Lingus. First things first, have you flown Aer Lingus in the way in which they are today as an independent regional airline?
No, not during their independence, but they are the airline connecting South Africa to much of Southern Africa. So
yeah,
you know, if I ever need to go somewhere there, it will probably be on Aer Lingus.
Well, the interesting thing as well is that, which is unusual for an African carrier because so many are loss-making with the exception of two or three, is that Aer Lingus is nicely profitable, okay? It is financially sound. It has solid governance. It is a solid little airline. For context, for anyone that doesn't know Aer Lingus too well, it operates a fleet of just under 70 regional aircraft. So these are smaller aircraft. They're Embraer 135s, up all the way up to Embraer 195s, the likes that you would get, for example, with British Airways City Flyer at London City Airport, just to put it into context. 45 destinations in 15 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. As I said, it is somewhat remarkable that the airline is a kind of little, solid, profitable mini super connector of the Southern Africa region.
It's a bit like a Air Baltic of South Africa.
It is. It's like the little airline that could, but in the Southern Africa area, right?
Yeah.
That's quite a good example. And it doesn't belong to an alliance. It does code share, but there's no alliance. And now with the tie-up with Qatar Airways, Qatar taking a 25% stake, I think what we are to expect, and I had spoken with the CEO, Badr Almir, about this strategy earlier this year, is that he said the airline that they were assessing, which we now know as Aer Lingus, would ultimately increase feed to Qatar Airways' gateways in Southern Africa. So we're not talking about having Aer Lingus fly to and from Doha and then feed from there, but rather strengthening Aer Lingus' network to better capture passengers that are already making their way to different African gateways with QR via or from Doha. And so that's part of the strategy. The other part of the strategy, which I thought was really interesting, which he outlined on stage at the Bloomberg Economic Forum when he appeared with the CEO of Rwandair, Yvonne Makolo, is he said that the airline, which I now know is, and we now know is Aer Lingus, would ultimately have a strategy shift whereby they would better enhance the connectivity to the likes of Rwanda and the new Kigali hub that Qatar is building in Rwanda to ultimately boost Rwanda as a hub as well and facilitate those connections to the southern part of the continent. So again, how does each kind of stakeholder benefit? Rwanda benefits from ultimately having a strengthened hub connectivity with Qatar. Qatar is going to be ultimately initiating a fleet renewal program for Rwanda, and they're going to be having new aircraft and growing their fleet. So that's a big benefit for them there. They get the connectivity boost of the likes of Aer Lingus, which is able to leverage the Rwanda hub by connecting Central Africa with everywhere that they cover in the Southern African region. And each party benefits because the flow of passengers is solid from Doha into the likes of a new Kigali hub and then redistributed across the Southern Africa region via partners that QR has partnered up with, such as Air Link, Rwandair, and so on. And they have this kind of model pretty worked out in the north and the northwest and West Africa. But this is something that they had wanted to do for this area of the continent. And I can see the strategy there. But most importantly, as with, you know, different airline acquisitions, and this is predominantly and for now a real financial story, the fact that they are investing a 25% stake into an airline that is already profitable, we're in pretty decent territory here. This is, I don't think this can be compared with the likes of, for example, all those years ago when Etihad were literally interviewing airlines. Are you broke? Are you, you know, do you have an outstanding 10 years worth of debt? Well, we'd like to invest in you. And that's when we saw Etihad invest in Air Berlin, which later went bust. Alitalia, now gone. You know, Etihad Regional, Darwin. They used to fly to Cambridge when I was studying. They used to fly over me in a Saab. Yep, gone. So yeah. It's interesting.
What a time. It's interesting with an airline like Air Link that they also have co-chair agreements with Emirates. So you kind of have two close competitors, Qatar Airways and Emirates. Qatar Airways buys a stake. Does that in any way influence the current co-chair agreements? Because Air Link is essential in Southern Africa. There's no airline connecting many of these places. So flying from, for example, Namibia to, let's say, Mozambique, I don't know if there's exactly any direct routes between that, but many situations like that, you'll have to connect in Johannesburg on Air Link. So you really don't have a choice. So for an airline like Emirates, if Qatar Airways buying a stake means they lose this partnership for some reason,
which I'm going to hedge my bets. I think that could be on the cards. I just don't see how that, because we see this in other airline acquisitions when an airline of a competition takes a stake, sometimes then that agreement with a competitor fizzles out as a result. I'm naturally not sure, but let's see. That's a really interesting point. Let's see if that affects the co-chair agreement with EK.
Just a quick comment. One reason I want to fly Air Link is that they have the, okay, I know you're going to hate this, but they have the Embraer 135.
Yeah.
Which is, it's such an adorable aircraft, and I have never flown it. I've flown the CRJ so many times, but I've never flown this little, it looks like a mouse, kind of. But
I have flown the 135.
I hear it's not that great as a passenger. Is that right?
I think I was asleep for it. But I'm just trying to figure out who I flew it with. Now I'm scrolling through trying to check who did I. But it just reminded me of a kind of, a smaller CRJ or the likes that you would get on like Iberia, Air Nostrum, whatever. I think I had flown the 135 on Air France.
Wow, that was a while ago in that case.
It was a while ago. Well, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, so that would be why.
2 months.
shall we move into Q&A?
Let's do it.
Moritz is asking, hi Alex, have you guys seen the latest Four Seasons private jet? What are your thoughts? Will that be the first no coach airline? Will it last for longer?
I love that Moritz is asking a question, because I think this is the same Moritz who asks a lot of questions. So thanks for always tuning in. So I assume you're referring to the Four Seasons A321neo private jet.
Oh, which looks a beauty.
It is a beauty. It has a 2-2 configuration on board. And there was an amazing video by a guy called Justin TSE is his last name. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yes, I saw that. Yes, I did see that.
This amazing video of what it's like going on a round the world trip with Four Seasons. Yeah. I would highly recommend checking it out. After I saw that video, Oscar and I went to check the price and I was like, never mind. This is not for us, but it looks
incredible. You know what? Perhaps Wizz's 500 euro deal wasn't so bad after all, right?
I think the trip is in the multiple six figures per person. So it's just, goodness. It's crazy, but it looks so amazing. And the idea of having like it's kind of like a cruise where you can get off all over the world, but
yeah,
you're flying, so it's very quick. Plus, you can go around the whole world in a few weeks. So, and stay at Four Seasons. So, yeah, I love the look of that.
It's definitely my kind of like trip. Well, that's I need to have a look at this. I mean, okay, not the price tag part, but the actual, you know, what it does, a beautiful private A321neo, Four Seasons branded on the outside, bouncing around from one Four Seasons to the other. I would quit the podcast to pursue a life of that.
Yeah. Okay, so Greg asks, what in your opinion is the most underrated airline in the world?
Ooh.
Alex?
That's really difficult to think off the top of my head.
I know. I used to say Oman Air. I just don't feel like that's the case anymore. I
think it used to be Oman Air. Yeah, I think Oman Air is definitely what it used to be. I mean, there's underrated for what? Because there's so many different regions. You know,
okay.
For example, you know, right, you know in the UK how British Airways is very London Airways. I always admire that with the UK, KLM of Amsterdam have taken such a vital role in serving all these different regions that are just left unserved otherwise. So I admire the airline for that. I think it doesn't get enough recognition for that. Yeah. Does that make it underrated? Probably not. But see what I mean? Oman Air, in terms of experience, how it was before they slashed up on, you know, the whole book of how they were doing
the
things.
Experience.
Before they butchered the experience. I think it was one of the most underrated in the world.
I'm going to say, for me, this, it's not that people say this airline is bad, but I think China Airlines of Taiwan doesn't get discussed as much as they should, just because they're kind of overshadowed by EVA and now Starlux. But I think China Airlines are an incredible airline, one of the best in Asia. And I love to fly them anytime I can. The service is amazing. The food is amazing. Their seats are amazing. It's all very nice.
I think Air New Zealand is a bit underrated, especially with their nice innovations in economy class and the attention with the sky couch they've had forever. They've got the bunk beds coming soon. They're not discussed enough either.
Yeah.
I think Air New Zealand is pretty underrated.
That is a good point. Let's see what else we have here. Matt says, I regularly fly ultra long haul, for example, Doha to Auckland. Any tips to make economy feel like first class?
Loads of pillows, loads of blankets. Sleep as much as you can.
I don't. Yeah,
I mean,
I think
you're already
doing
it with a decent airline.
You need an empty row. That's the only way to get close.
You need an empty row, but those flights are full. I mean, it's amazing how busy the ultra long hauls are. In order for you to have that true business or first class experience, that can really be delivered if you've just got a row of three to yourself. I mean, then you're laughing because you can set up a beautiful bed. Actually, we are both quite good at that, aren't we? Of setting up a beautiful, plump bed in economy class, if required. That's always good. And you kind of line it with the first blanket, then maybe line it with the second one, pillows at the top, then the equivalent to your duvet, and making sure the armrests go all the way back, reclining each seat of the three to ensure to push out the seat cushion. That's probably how best to do it. If you're just sat upright on a full flight, it's going to be difficult to feel premium. I would say just try and sleep as much as you can so that those hours start to go down when you tap the screen. Do you ever get that moment where you tap the screen needs 2 seconds to update? So it says, when you tap it, it says 12 hours, 47 minutes remaining. Then you're like one, two, three, and then it goes down, drops down to the actual time.
I don't know what airlines you fly, but that doesn't happen to me, so...
It happens all the time on the 777 with QR. If you tap the screen, it takes about 2 seconds before it updates. That's always a bit of a nerve-wracking moment, because I'm like, have I been asleep for 12 minutes or 8 hours? You just don't know, you know?
I just feel like any time I try to keep track of the time, it goes so much slower. So my key is just not to look at the time remaining, because
sometimes when I'm scrolling through to choose what I'm going to watch, I'm forcing my eyes not to go to the top right where it's about to show me how long I've got left.
Okay, good. That is it for today's episode, you guys. We have had a pleasure as always. We hope you have a very demure and mindful week going forward. I hope you have a very, what other word can I use? very cutesy day out.
No, no, no. There's far more important things to be going on for it to be like that. And Dan, will I be seeing you later at the DNC in Chicago, where I think we'll be giving our endorsement to the nominee?
Our banner will just drop down.
Yeah, on air with Dan and Alex, debuting in Chicago at the DNC. Come see us. We were at the RNC as well. We just didn't publicize it.
It'll be us with Beyonce and Taylor Swift endorsing.
No, it will not be. Harris. We are our own people of our own right that will be on stage without the likes of mega superstars. Anyway,
you know, we
anyone who doesn't follow US politics has absolutely no idea what we're talking about right now, but that's okay, it's on air. We'll join you same time, same place next week. Thank you as always, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll see you then on air. Bye bye.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.